Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 297. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, I wasn't hopped up till I heard that music.
And Phil Wilson.
Oombly, 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 oombly.
Yeah, very nice, very nice, very nice.
Oh, man. Well, too bad we don't have anything to talk about today.
Yeah, it's pretty slow day.
Nothing
here
going on. Yeah, nothing happened last week at all. And, yeah. So let's talk about smart cities, because apparently there's a lot to be learned from Minneapolis, and I didn't know that we had a smart city.
Oh, come on. How could you not know these things?
Really?
We're so smart.
Well,
the brain exchange downtown, you know?
Hey. Yeah. Well, there was an article in Confluence Denver, which is a online publication that talked about how Minneapolis is really in a leadership position, you know, with smart cities, but not what you think. You know, when people talk about smart cities, it's all about, you know, the grid is smart and they've got sensors everywhere. It's kind of an internet of things, industrial internet. But this is really about stuff like the Startup Venture Loft and COCO and Treehouse Health and the, you know, the incubation stuff that's going on. And it was really an interesting article.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw somebody tweet about it from Denver, you know, like cool things going on in Minneapolis.
Oh,
and
really?
I go, what? You know, it's like Denver Boulder is telling us we're cool. You know, it's that doesn't happen too often. You know,
the only thing we don't have going for us is weed.
Yeah. Yeah. That 60 minutes last week on the pot industry in Colorado. Wow.
Hey,
that's
and, really and going you know, down. The commercial real estate industry out there is exploding because all these growers are looking for space.
Yeah. Yeah. No
so
kidding.
That's a thing.
I got a warehouse here in Eden Prairie. Oh no, they can't do that. Never mind.
Well, you never know what might come, you know,
yeah,
but
yeah. Oh,
thinking.
All right. So if Minneapolis is such a smart city,
it's true.
Then how come venture funding in our state, which had the best year since 2008, was still focused primarily on medical devices?
Yeah, that'll never change. You know,
still a big part of the makeup of it all. So
yeah, but you know, software is coming on. I mean, it was only $55 million in the fourth quarter of the what was the total? 368. So that is sort of a small fraction, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it'll be a lot bigger in 2015. I'll guarantee you. You know, it's coming on, but it's always going to be second fiddle to medtech. And like that article said, it's not just medical devices anymore. It's health IT and biotech. And, you know, the Life Science Alley said, and when you roll that all together, it's $430 million, according to their number.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, that's the growing part of quote unquote med tech is health IT and biotech. So yeah, it's a big business in Minnesota, and we're number two or three in the country, right?
Yeah.
Behind Massachusetts and California.
Yep. Yep. So quit flying over Minnesota if anyone else is listening outside of the state.
Yeah, really.
So. But I thought what was interesting in this article was the sentence that said nationally venture capitalists are mostly chasing software investment, which offers quicker returns than medical devices. And, you know, I could see that because the, you know, the FDA approval process and all the trials they have to run and so on, it's got to take a long time before they can say, yeah, let's go ahead and throw that in the chest of a few people. You know?
Yeah.
But you would think that would mean that they'd begin shifting even here more toward software.
Yeah. Well, I think they are, but it's the conservative Minnesota VCs that seems to be the last ones coming in that game. It's more the out of state VCs that are snooping around Minnesota now. And that's one reason why investment is going to grow in software.
Well, and the risk in med tech is, I think, lower than it is in software. You know, you don't know if you're going to get a hit or not with software. Things happen faster, for sure.
Yeah. Well, there's two sides to that coin, though. But the risk from the standpoint of how long it takes for that investment to pay off in medical devices, that's been increasing.
Right, but when you have a hit in medical devices, it's right.
It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. It lasts for a long time. Where you have a hit with software, you know, you get a nice bump, but you're under your next investment. You know.
Well, you know, there's Uber and Airbnb, and you know, the investors start seeing that, and they're going, "Oh boy," you know. So it's just different in Minnesota, and it's a different investment philosophy. The risk profile is different, and there are a lot more investors here going into medtech and have been for years and years and years than are going into software, unfortunately. Health IT, though, is where they can sort of converge somewhat, and health, mobile health, mHealth, and telehealth, and all the things happening there. That's, you know, you can't say that's not exciting.
Yeah, no kidding.
Happening.
Well, and we've got a couple of, healthcare electronic medical records groups here. We've got people that are involved in healthcare supply chain stuff with RFID and barcoding and things of that nature. So, I mean, there's enough going on that stuff should begin to emerge from established companies. So, yep.
I think you're right. Yep.
Well, so our retail analyst, Mr. Tim Elliott, or like we like to call him, Time Liot, because that's what your Twitter username looks like,
that's
Time
Liot. That's what Steve likes to call you. Okay. He finds that quite funny.
All right, that's Sporsh.
Yeah, Sporsh.
Sporsh.
Come on, let's get it
Sporsh.
Right.
Let's get Borsh.
So yeah,
Filson's the only one that has a good Twitter handle.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, you know, you slave away and that's work right. hard. And yeah you too, yeah. You kids too can have a fun Twitter handle.
So, Mr. Retail Analyst, anything going on with our pals at Best Buy?
Yeah, they reported pretty good, results over the holiday period, but the investors didn't like it. So
yeah, why?
Their stock went down. I think that investors just thought that they're going to have a better holiday period than they did, and of course, management has always managed expectations lower, and it didn't work this time for some reason.
Interesting. Yeah. Remember when they did that big lowering of expectations in the second quarter of last year?
Well, they even going into this holiday quarter, they even, you know, made a lot of showing that it would be lower. And, I think they did compared to what everybody else did, which was lower than before. They, 4.1% is actually very good, especially in something that's as competitive as electronics and other appliances and things that they sell.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they did as well as they probably could have. And unfortunately, the investment community didn't think that was good enough. So they're being punished. But it'll come back. I'm not concerned about Best Buy.
But their online, the e-commerce stuff went up, and yeah. I would think that would be, because the stock market likes to bet on futures.
Well, it's encouraging, but it's not enough that if that was up like 30% instead of 13, I think that people would have really taken notice. But as we look at holidays as a whole in retail, brick and mortar was down and online was way up. So you're seeing a transformation going on between customer behavior, where primarily it was centered around going to a brick and mortar store on Black Friday and all this kind of stuff. And we saw huge sales on Cyber Monday that were a lot higher than normal. So we're seeing this transition to online. So they really have to get on that. And they are. And so I stuck another story in the doc about how they're going to invest more money in their e-commerce efforts. So
yeah, that ZDNet story. Yeah, that was a good one. They have been spending heavily on e-commerce to build the site, to make it better. And apparently they aren't done yet.
Well, they should bring Randy Geis back.
Well, hey, let's talk about that a little bit. I tried to buy on BestBuy.com over the last
month,
not just for Christmas, for after Christmas. I've actually bought a lot of electronics in the last month. And you know what? I could not find what I wanted, or, you know, the search didn't work well for me. I try as I might, I was back at Amazon, you know. So I still don't think that site is up to snuff with, you know, except, you know, with the bar that an Amazon sets. And I suppose no one would argue that, you know. It's hard to be as good as Amazon for anybody.
Well, you know,
I just don't think it's there yet, you know.
Yeah.
By any stretch in my experience.
So one of the things that really blew me away, I called on B&H Photo Video years ago, mm-hmm. when I was doing the New Tech video toaster thing. And B&H is a machine. They're out in New York. And they've got a huge retail store, and it's, I mean, it's an amazing location. But their online presence is really strong. And, I mean, it is one that I would emulate. But I was really, truly blown away when I downloaded their iPad catalog app. And it's the best catalog I've ever seen anybody do. Hmm. So if you have an iOS device, if you have an iPad, go and download the B&H Photo Video catalog and just go through the app and look at how incredibly easy it is to find anything. I mean, it's a model that I would follow. And I look at their site compared with Best Buy and how easy it is to find stuff, mm-hmm. At B&H. And, I would say, you know, hire whoever did that.
Yeah, really? Yeah. 'Cause I don't think Best Buy has an iPad. Dedicated iPad app, do they? Or if they do, I've never heard about it.
I don't think so, no.
No, I don't either.
So they can, you know, they need to keep spending, and Jolie knows it. And, you know, I hope they're hiring the right people. You know, I mean, certainly Target has had a lot of splash about all the new people they're hiring. I suspect Best Buy is too. But they need to go to another level, and he knows it.
Yeah.
And the market knows it. So,
well, what's that going to do to Target? And Tim, you probably have a lot of thoughts about this, about Target closing. They're going to bail out of Canada and close 133 stores.
Yep. It's been a horrible failed experiment. There's a lot of lessons to be learned from this. Yeah.
And mostly in organizational and scale, that's for sure.
Yeah,
they did. You know, looking back, it's easier to pinpoint the problems. But when they first launched, there were a lot of eyebrows raised as fast as they did their rollout. I mean, normally a retailer, when they're going into a foreign market, they'll test it with, you know, I don't know, 15 or 20 stores in major markets, and then they'll tune it to get it right. They went with 124 right out of the gate, and logistically they had lots of problems, both with their IT systems, but also with just the merchandising. The Canadians are not Americans, and even though there's a lot of cross-border traffic to Targets in the U.S., or there was before they went there, they have different needs and wants, and Target just didn't supply that, and other competitors up there did. And there's a lot of competitors in Canada that we don't even know about here at all that are very entrenched in the culture there. And it's been only Walmart and Costco and Lowe's. And you know, those are the only retailers that really you can count from the U.S. that have gone up there and done anything good. So it was a tough thing for them. And their leadership there was bad, and the whole thing was botched. So it's good to see that the new CEO is looking at that. He looked at it with an eye to try to fix it, but it just wasn't fixable in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, well, they say they wouldn't be profitable for, what, 2021?
2022. Yeah. I would say, okay, that's
it's
not
time
gonna
to get out.
Yeah.
Well, what I thought was interesting was they did a lot of stores in small malls that are kind of secondary and tertiary, and they were typically two-level stores. So that was the first thing that was odd. But the most telling thing was not in this Star Tribune article, it was in another article I read. I'll try to find it, but it was about a man up in Vancouver, and he talked about when Target opened, how excited his wife was for it to open, and she stopped going, and they would drive across the border to go to a U.S. Target. And so they, you know, I mean, you know, it depends on what time of day you go, but if you've ever crossed from Washington State into Vancouver, it's a pretty ugly border stop, because it sometimes can take a really long time to get through both ways, actually.
You got to really want to go shopping bad.
Well, the best thing to do is to park on the U.S. side and take the train into Vancouver. So
sure.
That's how Steve smuggled his drugs.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, I can only get so many bags up there, though, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the secret really is that why they failed, the Target failed in Canada is clear. It's failing to stock enough back bacon and toques, right?
Precisely.
That was one problem.
Yeah, I think so.
And too much brawny and not enough sparkle towels. That was another problem.
Too much brawny.
They should have hired Phil as the VP of merchandising.
Yes. Back bacon. Must have more back bacon.
Hey. Oh, man.
Stop.
That's crazy, Canucks.
So the Minnesota names a new commissioner of Minnesota IT. And
chief IT officer there.
So
that's right.
Have you ever heard of this guy before? Tom Baden?
No.
32-year veteran of IT in the state system. So he's been around a while, so he probably knows where all the skeletons are and all the closets and so on.
All the Windows 2000 licenses go.
Seen his fair share of gray metal desks and fluorescent lighting, that's for sure. So.
Well, you know, I've had a fair amount of dealing at the county, Hennepin County level, and also at the state level in IT in past lives. And, you know, there's a lot of really dedicated, terrific, hardworking people that are in the IT groups, but
enterprise quality.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Graham. That's actually a very kind way to say that. Yes. Yes. That's a good way to say it. Because it's tough because you can't pay even close to the private sector. So it's got to be tough.
This guy sounds like most of his career has been in the state government and just other agencies.
Yep. So,
well, I think that's probably the best way to go. Coming in and having somebody new start into the, you know, trying to figure out, you spend the first 5 years trying to figure out the whole bureaucracy chain first and foremost, probably. So
yeah.
At least he's got that down and can maybe get things done. So,
right.
Upgrade to Windows 98 or something. So
he was previously chief information officer for the Minnesota Department of Human Services in St. Paul. So I don't know what they do, but you know, he's got a background in IT in the state. So we'll see.
Yeah.
He's got his hands full with Minsure. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, although it seems like it's really moving in the right direction, so it's not a big deal. Hey, Phil, are you still at Cocoa? Have you guys moved out yet?
No, we're still at Cocoa. We'll probably be there through at least the end of, February.
So. Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, have you learned much about this, that Microsoft is partnering with Cocoa to support startups?
No, I'm sorry. I haven't. I've been actually, I was in New York all this week doing the BuzzFeed thing. So I wasn't able to, find out, but I'm interested to find out what that means. You know, they had a very strong partnership with Google for entrepreneurs and Google in general. And I know that that was changing to some extent because first it impacted the sponsorship of Mobile Twin Cities, but it'll be interesting to see, what the Microsoft piece has to do with. They've got some interesting things going on.
Yeah, they do. I learned a little bit about it, Phil, while you were gone. By the way, did they feed you any booze out there?
A little bit.
Booze fed? Okay, just
That's right.
That's Steve. I credit Steve with that one. But no, I was into Cocoa on Wednesday and chatted with Matt Pasiga, one of the co-founders of Camera Slice, which is the early stage startup that was the first one selected as a BizSpark fellow startup. And they get really nice benefits out of this as an early stage startup, which includes like $60,000 over the course of a year in cloud services.
Azure. Oh, really?
Services. So that's significant for an early stage startup to get that. You know, I said to Matt, I said, yeah, well, then it's like your largest investor to date. Essentially, it is, you know.
Besides them, yeah, besides each of them.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, it, and he was meeting with the BizSpark guy who's based locally, who's a Microsoft employee named Dave, and I didn't get his card. He was going to email me.
It's but, just Dave. It's
yeah,
just
we'll
Dave.
Just look him up
it's
on the
Dave
net.
At Microsoft.com. No, don't try that. But he's apparently the locally based coordinator for BizSpark. And I don't know if he's going to be I think he said he'll be spending a lot of time at Coco, but maybe more at Uptown than Grain Exchange.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like it is going to be more of an Uptown based sort of thing. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, what I found interesting was if you look at, we'll put a link in the show notes to the Microsoft BizSpark page or section of their website. But, Azure really started out as infrastructure and platform as a service for Microsoft-centric technologies, right? And right. I know I've only peripherally kept up with what's going on, but, you know, looking at their page, they're prominently calling out that you can create a virtual machine on their network, you know, Windows or Linux VM, running PHP, Python, blah, blah, blah. I'm sure MySQL. You can deploy a website. You can store your data and video just in their storage network and deploy a mobile app, blah, 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 and Android and Apple iOS. And, you know, one of the things that I'm going to throw out to you guys, because I'm just curious what you think, is it seems to me that Microsoft is aggressively positioning themselves as much as they can to be agnostic. And still, they're trying to balance being agnostic with technology that's out there that people are using and yet still promote, their own stuff. I mean, I see this with even redoing the web browser that they're going to have in Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
I
would agree. Azure, however you want to pronounce it, is
whatever.
Whatever. It's going definitely going up against AWS, and it's
right.
It's made a pretty good showing. And I mean, they don't want to just attract people that use 100% Microsoft technology there, obviously, or it doesn't make sense.
Well, they've been pushing a lot into the iOS development community.
Yep.
Even John Gruber's app, Vesper, uses Azure as the back end.
Oh, really?
Interesting. Huh.
For their syncing service. Yeah. Yep. Huh. So, I mean, if anyone's going to look around and try to be as Mac-centric or as Apple-centric as possible, and he found that was the best solution, they're making good inroads.
Well, yeah. I remember when our pal Doug Olson took the first position when he was running a development group there. I asked him about the, you guys remember when Steve Ballmer was walking through the group of salespeople and he saw some guy on an iPhone and he picked it up and threw it down allegedly. And,
I'm sure that really happened.
Okay. Yeah, probably. But, I asked Doug, I said, so what's it like? 'Cause you're walking in there with a MacBook Pro. And he goes, Steve, that's why they hired me. They hired me because I know all these different platforms and I'm using what developers are using, which is, MacBook Pro all tricked out running VMs so they can test stuff in Linux and Mac OS and Windows simultaneously on one machine. And they wanted somebody that knew all these environments and all of that. And so you look at this Azure site and they ask you a question, already have an app in mind? Check out the Microsoft Developer Network's track pages to find the information you need. And those track pages include, I build .NET apps, I build Windows apps, I build iOS apps, I build web apps, I build Android apps. And so they've got tools and software surrounding all of that, which I think is really fascinating. Anyway.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a big push by them. And this BizSpark program, which has been around for quite a while, actually, I knew the guy who was originally in charge of it at Microsoft, a guy named Don Dodge, but then he suddenly got cut loose and landed at Google the next day as a developer evangelist. But anyway, I see that they also offer, as part of this program, help in marketing your app, which ought to be interesting. So, you know, it's nice. It's a full scale program that should benefit, other Minneapolis based startups, for sure, beyond just Camera Slice, which is, you know, coming along quite nicely from what I hear.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah, good story. Coco's just everywhere, you know? I mean, man, those guys, they don't sit still. They're always doing something new, you know? A credit to them.
Well, our pal Julio did an article about this used tech retailer, Device Pit Stop, and they buy your used equipment. They also do device repair and so on. But the biggest revelation for me in here, and I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but the Device Pit Stop chain is property of Minnetonka-based NTY Franchise Company.
Oh, I know this guy.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. Ron. Yeah, yeah. What's Ron's last name?
Olson.
Oh,
it's Olson.
Oh, Ron Olson. Yeah, yeah. He was head of GrowBiz International, which was...
Oh, sure.
Don't you remember Play It Again Sports and all the different franchises they had? Disco Round and what's the Once Upon a Child?
Once Upon a Child. And
he was the CEO brains behind that. And I think he just became a franchising consultant. And this is his son. I'll be darned.
Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to ntyfranchise.com in Minnetonka, but they have a bunch of new strategies. One's called Close Mentor, you know, gently used closes. One's called New Uses, which is good as new household items. And then this Device Pit Stop for tech. But there's a clothing exchange and something for kids, a resale store for kids. And so it is, like you say, it's the whatever that franchise company was called before.
Well, it was called GrowBiz International.
Now that's it. Yeah.
It's got a new name now. I forget what the new name is.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's a pretty interesting franchise that I didn't even, or franchisor with franchise.
So you've not been to Device Pit Stop there in Minnetonka, right around the corner from you?
I have not. No. Well, actually, because all my buddies invested in CPR, that cell phone repair. There's one in Eden Prairie, and they're putting another one in Maple Grove, and there's a couple of others, and it's a national chain. So that's where I've been going, because they're right across from the Best Buy in Eden Prairie.
Well, apparently there's one in Burnsville, so I'm going to seek this place out next week and check them out, see what it's like.
Okay.
Yeah, do that. Yeah.
So, Phil, I see that you slid in a... Mobile March keynote speaker lineup.
Yeah, I just thought I'd throw that out there and share it with you, everybody. And there'll be a got to get the news up on the website and that sort of thing. But we have we're doing three keynotes this year: one for morning, and then right after lunch, and then afternoon. Oh, and I see Steve is going to add his IoT Fuse one in there too. So, Billy Jerwicks from Space 150 will kick things off in the morning. He's the founder and CEO there at Space 150. And I know a few people. So Mark Wilkie, the CTO of BuzzFeed, will be talking on the subject of mobile strategy in the afternoon. And then at lunch, we're kind of taking a little deviation here into kind of talking about the topic of mindfulness. I don't know if you've seen any of the talk about mindfulness in a rather tech crazy world, but Alex Haley of President Devers and does some work also at the U will be speaking lunch. Yeah, it's very cool. So
I'd like to hear the CTO at BuzzFeed, because I'd love to hear if he talks about the story of scaling BuzzFeed.
Oh yeah.
So that would be interesting.
It's very cool. Yeah, I spent the week out there, so obviously I learned everything BuzzFeed, but, you know, got to meet the CEO, Jonah Peretti, founder and CEO, and everybody that really has been involved in that from day one. Yeah. When it actually started in 2006 as sort of an incubator lab on sharing. And it's really a very cool story, and we're doing some really great stuff as far as managing the tech growth, because it really is a tech company with a content company are wrapped around it. So
yeah,
I think it'll be really exciting to see.
So we forgot to ask. Nobody asked it. So I will. When you were out in New York, what flavor of Kool-Aid did they make for you?
It's red. It's red Kool-Aid. So I guess that would be cherry.
Okay.
So,
all right. Just check
it. So, yeah. Right. But, and it's free. It's right next to the Froyo machine.
That's right. That's right. New people have the Kool-Aid.
That's it. You know, what's really funny though, is going into that office, and it's like you're going into the Hollow Tree, you know, where all the elves are, because this is the magic land of gifts and listicles but it's an incredible vibe there. That it's very active, enthusiastic, and really they are growing like crazy. In fact, yesterday they moved the entire editorial staff to another building because they've run out of room in their current building, and they're getting a new building late in 2015. So they have to actually split up the company for 10 months and then come back together in the new building.
Well, just tell them that they should ship people out to Minneapolis.
We already got a lot of Minneapolis.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, I'll throw in the thing about IoT Fuse, the Internet of Things Fuse event. The keynoters are Joel Young, the CTO of Digi. You know, they own Ethereos as well, the IoT platform. And Deepinder Singh, who's CEO of 75Fahrenheit.com. They won the Minnesota Cup. They're the ones that do the HVAC sensor stuff for in buildings and so on. Mm-hmm. Very well, great vision, very well defined, and it's going to be pretty interesting. We've already have 15 sessions that people have signed up for or have offered to do, so that was kind of cool.
That's great.
Hey, we skipped over one thing, and Graham is just incredibly enthused and excited about his new Pono player, aren't you?
Well, I don't have it yet. But,
you don't?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, and I won't till God knows when. Okay. I mean, it could be end of February. It could even go longer. You never know. They're trying to build them as fast as they can. But yeah, that was a great story that Julio did. I hadn't seen that. Thanks for putting that in the show notes. And it sounds like Mike Evangelist, who's the CMO over at Code 42,
and a former high-ranking Apple guy.
Yes, it looks like he's really, really into the audiophile thing and wrote a whole series of tweets on the device, which he has. Apparently, he got one of the early Kickstarter models, which he probably hasn't had all that long.
He says it's been a month.
Okay,
five weeks, something like that.
Yeah, they shipped them. They shipped 15,000, and he was in that group, or maybe he was in one of the really early groups. I don't know, but yeah, interesting.
What's really fascinating is last night we were with family, and everybody was over at one of the sisters' houses, and my wife's nephew, who's actually 52, but my wife's nephew, because she was the baby of the family, but. His son, who's 15, had these really high-end Audio Technica headphones. I mean, the big, you know, the big studio cup kind of headphones, and plugged into his Android phone. And so I asked him about his headphones, and he was telling me all about his headphones. And then Mark, his dad, my wife's nephew, said, "Oh yeah, he's really into audio quality." And then Justin proceeds to tell me all about, you know, how he'll only do 192 kilobits per second, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I mentioned the Pono player, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I want to get one of those. I was reading all about it." It's like, you're 15 years old, for God's sakes. I thought this was just for older audiophiles, you know? And
well, it's going to be a toy that they're all going to want to have, but and I'm not one of them. You know, I mean, like my post, I just said, you know what? I really, really like this, what I heard. And, you know, if I'm going to have a music player, it might as well be this one because it's the best I've heard.
Yep.
Now, you know, one thing is I'm sure I was listening on really, really good headphones too, you know, or cans. I guess you got to call them cans when you're hip, you know, but.
Which I'm not, so I'll call them headphones.
No, I'm not either. But, but you know, I had to gulp real hard to buy a $150 pair of headphones with Bluetooth capability. I bought a set of Jabra something or other that's are really I love them, you know, but, and I'm dying to, you know, listen to the Pono with those, but I'm not going to go buy a $300 pair of headphones, you know, but yeah, I had seen this story, you know, somebody immediately sent me this Gizmodo story, you know, and it was our buddy Randy, you know, who had to immediately call me a sucker for saying right, I was yeah. buying a Pono.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this guy at you know, and I know who this guy is, Mario Aguilar, that, you know, he had to like rain on Neil's parade. Don't buy what Neil Young is selling. Well, you know, this is a crass attempt to get clicks, you know.
Right.
This is a clickbait story. And, you know, what I find really interesting is, yeah, most people aren't going to notice the nuances of differences between these different kind of files and everything. And
oh, I think they will, though. I really think they will.
Well, I do too. But, you know, the funny thing about this guy's story, which I think is a pretty cheap shot, is he admits he bought a $300 pair of headphones and it probably isn't necessary. And he's right. So, you know, why is he telling people that they shouldn't try a $399 music player? And, you know, I don't own a standalone music player. And as I said in my story, I never really have. I never bought an iPod. But I'll buy one of these because I think it's kind of cool and I want to have a new toy, you know. So anyway.
Well, plus, you know, that portable record player that you have, it's a little bit big.
Right.
And plus, hey, when you walk around, doesn't the needle move back and forth on the record?
It's funny you would mention that. I've been trying to figure out what to do with my turntable. And my son said, don't sell it. Keep hang on to it.
Well,
it's a really, really good turntable.
Not only don't sell it, but Best Buy sells a USB turntable, so you can actually record all your old vinyl digitally. And and so I've been kind of tempted with that. The only thing I really want to do, though, is I have a gigantic array of laser discs, you know, of all these classic movies and everything else. And I'm thinking, oh man, some of them you can't get on, they're not available on DVD, and I want to be able to record those, but I don't have a working LaserDisc player anymore.
Huh.
So.
Well, so would I be able to like grab those files off my old vinyl and somehow input it into the Pono? I can do that with CDs.
Sure,
I know that.
Yeah. If you have that USB turntable, you can do that, but you could also go out just through, you know, an audio out from your stereo system and then just patch into it and record it.
Yeah. Okay.
But we can walk through that later.
Oh yeah. That'll be fun.
Cause we need to talk about Obama's war on hackers.
Okay.
As another
big
story.
Well, before we do that though, the one thing getting back to Mike Evangelist here that I thought was interesting is that he just basically says that the difference between Pono and say an iPod or another player is the DAC output section. So the digital audio converter section is much better, and that you really don't need these high definition FLAC files. You can just losslessly, you know,
off of CDs,
rip your CDs. Yep.
Yeah.
So exactly. You don't have to buy all your music again. You can just go back to your CDs, re-rip them as a lossless, and they sound great.
Yeah. There you go.
Yep.
It's so worth it just for that is basically what he says. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So I think we're going to see a bunch of action in this area, and you'll be able to buy one of these in the coming months that will not be awkward in your pocket like this triangular Pono is.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to carry mine in my pocket anyway, and besides that, I have a lot of cargo pants now.
Oh, okay.
So what do I care?
So you're all set up for it.
Yeah, right. I'm ready, baby.
Oh, man. And since you don't wear underwear, you can just wear one of those straps around your, you know, to hold
hang
your,
it down your
a
leg.
Little holster. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway. All right. So let's.
Is that a Pono in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?
I knew somebody was going to do
You'll cut that one out.
Yeah. So in the other top stories is this thing about Obama's proposed law against hacking, and of course the David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, has suggested banning some online messaging apps that do end-to-end encryption. And
well, basically, they're looking at banning encryption.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, which is a horrible development.
Well, how's that going to work? I mean, come on.
Well, I don't
Cameron,
know.
Cameron, what an idiot.
I'd also like to ban guns, but that ain't happening.
Well, true.
So.
Yeah, no, this is very chilling because it seems like the world's governments are all getting together, and normal people don't care. You know, it's like, oh, encryption, I don't care. You know, but once it's banned and once all of this stuff, clicking on a link on Twitter to an unauthorized document is a felony. Once all that happens and people get thrown in jail, then people will wake up, but it'll be way too late.
Yeah, yeah.
Where this going down to this police state sort of view of the world? No, if this happens,
what gets proposed and what gets thought about and what gets thrown out there doesn't always happen, guys. I mean, just true. let's not freak out here. I mean, it still has to get done. It is a democratic society that we live in. So currently. I'm not saying I'm not. Oh, come on, really?
By the lobbyists for the lobbyists. But Tim, did you get that tinfoil hat I sent? Anyway,
yeah.
I'm usually the one who's leaping to the police state thing, but here's what's interesting, and I'll look for links to these articles, but there's been several articles that I've read that talked about how governments, including the U.S. government, is now taking steps to enhance and encourage encryption on the part of enterprise so that all their stuff is encrypted, because that, they're all getting attacked and they want to prevent another Sony from happening to a U.S. company and all this kind of stuff. And even though ironically in that article that you about Obama's war on hackers, the very top tweet that's in there is New York Times accidentally posted their employee database to their website with social security numbers, passwords, and salaries.
Yeah, well, that was just a fake tweet.
It's a bogus tweet. Yeah.
Yeah, his point was, if this actually came out, which is plausible, and you clicked on that link, you would get thrown in jail. If these laws go through, that was the point of the whole thing.
Right.
I just think it's a chilling thing, and it will stop, or not stop. It will slow down innovation, and it's taking our liberties, even more. And I stuck that FBI story from the New York Times in too, where they're becoming more NSA like, and they're keeping all this intelligence on people, whether you're under investigation or not.
Well, I know that I've got to be a target because I use a VPN and I also use Tor. And so I'm sure that I'm being extra special watched.
As they say, you don't have anything to worry about, Steve.
Because you use those things, Steve, they can't see anything. So what are you going to do?
That's right. Yeah. And then the FBI is broadening their surveillance role.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
the thing that really bothers me is have you heard about these dirt boxes where they fly them in airplanes, and they're basically portable cell towers that suck in information from every phone that's in there. So you could be sitting in your house where you have legal rights to unlawful search and seizure. They could fly a plane with a dirt box and get all of your stuff off your phone, all of your call logs, your text messages, everything. And then maybe, years later, that evidence comes back, but they didn't have any kind of warrants or anything to get that. They're just collecting information because they can.
Because they can, right. That there's this slightly gray area that the Patriot Act has allowed, which is all that, that's what fostered the NSA vacuum surveillance of all the metadata. And that's what's also promoting this with the FBI and the planes and the fake cell towers and all that. So
yeah,
it's ugly.
It is. All right. Let's move on to something happening.
Okay. So our pals, the Republicans, want a net neutrality law, but only if it stops the FCC from handling it. So they want to, the FCC is leaning toward making internet service providers, common carriers, so that they can then regulate them.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have introduced a bill to basically say, no, they're not. They're actually information service providers.
Yeah.
And so it's different. And, there's pros and cons both ways. But you know, just to have it open. I mean, at the end of the day, we've talked about it. I mean, I remember my grandmother when she passed that she had paid $5 or $4.95 a month for her Western Digital phone that she'd had for like 30 years. And, you know, she could have bought 100 phones after 1996 for what she paid.
But and that phone was good quality, made out of Bakelite.
It was, but you know, if it wasn't for the opening up and the common carrier status of the telecom companies, we would never have been able to buy our own phones. So there's got to be a balance there somewhere. But you know what? We should do like a whole show on this.
I think that all of us want more choice than the current choice we have for broadband. Because typically we have maybe two, maybe three, depending on where you live. But we would like it to be like it is in Europe, where you have, you know, 15 or 20 alternatives.
Right.
And that would mean that the prices would probably go down because there's more competition. So that's what we want to see.
Yep.
And I don't think that the FCC regulating the internet under Title II, that would happen. I think it would go the other way, actually, where you'd have fewer providers and prices will be higher.
Right. Well,
and that's why I'm opposed to that.
Actually, what I want is a holodeck so I can recreate Graham's house and so I can watch him on the podcast in his jammies, see where he sits.
Okay.
And actually, I know he's muting and he's sneaking in some Raisin Bran in the morning, aren't you?
No, it's Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops.
It's a Fruit Loops man. Everyone knows that.
Special K.
Oh, okay.
Vanilla almond, baby. All right. Nothing better.
So does Google Glass have a future?
Nope.
No?
Thank you.
You seriously think it's dead? Okay, so that's not. All right, so then.
What Tony Fadell does with this will be interesting, though, I think.
Yeah.
Because his job is to productize whatever Glass becomes. Obviously, the Glass as we've known it is dead, but they're promising something in the future, so we'll see.
Yep. Well, and then Apple HomeKit seems to be moving forward. That was another big story this past week, and discussions about Siri driving the connection, so you can say, hey, Siri, turn the lights on.
Right, but what I thought was interesting is you do that through an Apple TV. So the Apple TV is your smart things hub, basically.
Right. Well, that thing is horribly underused anyway. But you know what? I got to tell you that I am getting just so mad at my Apple TVs because every time I turn it on, I've got to go through a restart because it seems to lose the internet connection. I don't know what's going on, but that just happened after a recent update.
Well, they haven't really updated that whole infrastructure in so long. I mean, it's running what, an A5 maybe?
Probably.
Something like that. I mean, it just needs to be refreshed, even if in its current form, to just stay current.
Yep.
And especially if it's going to be running, you know, a server for your home automation stuff.
Right.
So hopefully we'll see that forthcoming.
Well, and then
I just thought that was interesting. I thought you would like that, Steve.
Yeah, I did, and I do. Then another one was the this other gadget that you put in here. I don't know where you find all this stuff unless you're trolling the Android sites and so on. But the Remix Ultra tablet, I did not hear about this at CES.
I'm going to give you a secret. What, Steve? My secret is I subscribe to the Tech Meme RSS feed.
Oh.
And what I do is I let that sucker pile up for the week and then I go through it before I make the notes.
I see.
And I get nuggets like this that come out of the Tech Meme feed.
Yeah, it's great. I actually go to the Tech Meme site, so that's probably not as efficient.
Yeah, which changes all the time and you never see the feed of stuff that's floated up to the top. Anyway.
So
I put this in. This almost became my cool thing of the week, but I have something even cooler than this. So I thought I'd throw this in.
All right.
Well, was at CES. And it's called the Remix Ultra, and it's a Android tablet, but it looks like a Surface. So imagine the Surface form factor. So it's got a kickstand, it's 10-inch or whatever, and it's got a nice keyboard that connects to it. And, you know, it looks like a pretty decently spec'd device. It's run by some ex-Google engineers. And it looks like, you know, it's to be an Android productivity tablet.
I lost Tim there for a second.
It's a bummer.
You know what I'm a hankering for though, guys, is horses. Have we got horses? Have we had some horses to talk about things?
Thank you, horses. It is time, and some say about time, for Steve's security tip of the week.
Now you've gone too far the other way. Now you've just completely gone.
I did that on purpose.
On to the whole warhorse vibe. So.
Well, last night when we were all together as family, I did a little informal survey and I asked people, the only exceptions out of 14 people were my wife's two nephews who both come out of the computer industry, so that they are, you know, using password managers and all that. Everybody else predominantly uses one password everywhere. Yeah. And most of them were super simple. And that's why when I saw a video come out about a bit that Jimmy Kimmel did on his show the other night, Jimmy Kimmel gets people to give him their passwords. I'm going to put a link here to the video because it is just so drop dead humorous. Oh my God, where one woman, you know, says, mine's my cat's name and a random number. And then the woman goes, blah, blah, blah. And then what's your cat's name? Oh, it's Jasmine. Oh, okay. And, she had said something about the random number being her birth date or something. She goes, and when were you born? June 7th, what year?
All right, exactly.
And she set her password on national television, you know, and it just was so funny. But so many people are still doing that, where they use the same thing, and it's obvious stuff like it's my birth date and my initials. It's like, hello, you know. I mean, it was just funny. Anyway, so my tip of the week is, I'm going to put a link in here too about password management, how not to be hacked in 2015. Okay. But do not use the same password everywhere. You know, use some variation of it that you'll know what the variation is. You know, use the name of the site in the middle, or, you know, whatever, and change it around. But also take a look at that article, Password Management, and it's got some good tips in there. And of course, do not give out your password on national television if you're interviewed. That's my tip of the week.
I like it.
Anyway. Okay. Now it's time for cool thing of the week, and I think we should start this week with Graham.
Oh yeah, baby.
All right.
Well, I'm all about cool things. Yeah. And the thing is, I read about them and then I have to wait for them. I want the Apple wearable camera, which we don't have no idea when it's coming or if it's coming, but the story broke this week about the patent that surfaced, and it looks like they're going to be competing with GoPro, which caused GoPro stock to dive off a cliff.
Yep.
It's come back a little bit. Who knows what we'll see, but apparently the patent refers to shortcomings of the GoPro, and, you know, probably without mentioning GoPro, but, you know, I've been tempted to get a GoPro several times, you know, just to use on my stand-up paddleboard, if nothing else. But, you know, now I'll wait for the Apple device. And I'm already waiting for the new, you know, the new generation of the MacBook Air later in the year. So
you're going to buy a new computer?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready for one now. But now I got to wait for the new MacBook Air, as we talked about last week, which is probably going to be towards the end of the year, I would think. And who knows when the GoPro competitor camera will come out, but I'll buy it when it does.
Well, I just put a link under your cool thing of the week on details on Apple's upcoming Lightning port specs for third-party accessories. So they're allowing third parties to tap into the Lightning port now. And there were two blog posts that I read conjecturing what those kinds of third-party accessories could or would be. And one of them was a connection to a camera, an external camera that would be So you'd have the wireless adapter. So rather than do it through Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, there'd actually be an adapter. You'd plug in the lightning port, and then the camera would be, you know, some distance away, 100 feet away or something. And I thought, well, why could it not be on a drone? And so that should be pretty interesting to see what happens with this wearable camera patent, but also with the lightning port being opened.
Sure. So, yeah.
Phil.
Interesting.
What?
What's your thing?
What is my cool thing? Well, I think that, there are two things that really kind of do what I do in my day. That is work and then go to my daughter's basketball games. So, you know, you combine tech, you combine basketball, and you come up with the smart basketball. Have you seen
interesting.
This?
Interesting. No, is the basketball cool. itself? You have to say.
Yeah, it is. It's basically a smart basketball that measures things like rotation and all sorts of very cool things. Shooting sweet. Arc, dribble intensity and speed, shot release speed, backspin, that sort of a thing. And it's like $179. $94.50 is the name of the company that's putting it out right now. But it works with Android and iOS, and I think it's very cool.
That is
this
very
is at
cool.
the forefront of the IOB market. The Internet of Basketball.
Internet of Basketball. Yes. Yeah. So
what
there you
the
go.
Kidder. Cool.
So that's
that
my
is
cool. cool.
Thing. That is that very is a cool. cool. Thing. Yeah.
And you also can have an interactive net that goes with it. I noticed you can get that as well.
I wonder if anybody's doing anything in golf yet with smart golf balls. Smart balls. I think that would be harder to make because obviously you'd be whacking it with a club and that might do some damage to the sensor.
Mike.
But, All right, Timster.
Dribbling a basketball is no walk in the park, that's for sure.
Well, a lot of us have very large cell phones these days, and we want to do productivity on them. And I've been looking at various portable keyboards, and I just found this one this week. It's by Waytools. It's called the TextBlade. It is the most ridiculously small keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard you've ever seen for smartphones or tablets. The only thing that gives me pause is that the design is kind of a V, and I'm not sure if I would be able to type comfortably on a split keyboard like that, but I'd be willing to give it a try. It's $100, so it's not super cheap, but if you're looking at high-quality Bluetooth keyboards like this, many of them are, you know, at $100, or some of them are a little over $100, so it's priced, I think, competitively with others. But the design, you'll have to say, if you look at the picture, is really cool.
Yeah, it looks like the angle of that V though looks like it probably is adjustable, wouldn't you think?
You would think. So hopefully it is. I may get one of these. I don't know. This looks really good. One thing I have wanted is back in the day I used to have a stowaway keyboard, which was for the Palm, and it's around here someplace. Anyway, what I want is something like that. And there is a company that makes it, but it's like $150. So if that was $100, I'd probably get that because that is exactly what I want, which is like this really tiny, but when you fold it out, it's a full keyboard.
Very cool.
So anyway.
And you know, now that I look at this, maybe it's not adjustable. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I don't think it is. If you look at the video. I don't think it is.
Looks like it's a sort of a snap together thing. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but I would bet though, even though it's at a V shape and an angle, that when you if you're not looking at it, if you're trying to type, I think it's going to probably fit nicely if your elbows are resting on the table, you know, and I think it could be easy. All right,
yeah, very nice. But it's very 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 small.
Nice.
You wear it with your cargo pants, Graham.
Ah ha ha. My black or my khaki.
Either I think would be fine.
Okay.
You have no camo. You don't do the camo? Okay.
Oh, I haven't gotten those yet.
All right. Well, then you can't hide in the woods. Okay. So my cool thing of the week is something that I had intended to buy into, and then life got in the way, and I didn't do it. And they ended last night at midnight, Friday night. So didn't quite get to it. But anyway, this is it's an Indiegogo project. They are at 801% of their funding goal. So they tried to raise 80 grand. They raised $640,000. And what it is it's a little rubberized button called the Flick, F-L-I-C, and it's a wireless smart button. And you've got to watch the video because it goes through the whole thing. It's actually a fun video. They did a nice job. But you can do stuff like, you know, you can basically say what I want this particular Flick to do. So you can have one that controls your lights. You can wear one that will, you just push the button once and it'll send a loved one your location. If you do it twice, it'll send a distress signal. You can play music. You can say, tell it to find your phone. They had one where you have a snooze button. So you just have it on your nightstand. You reach over, you push it, and it automatically snoozes your phone. You can do it so you can take a picture. So you can set your phone up and then push the button. So it's a programmable button, basically. And yeah, it's
like the picture of the grandma with pictures of her grandchildren with like she doesn't know how to dial them on her smartphone. So she hits the button with her picture.
Well, you know, there are some grandmas that are technically challenged.
But why would you give them a smartphone? Come on, just 10.
Yeah. Well, but you could probably do the same thing with Skype on a tablet.
So how much are these things?
Well,
it looks like they're $35.
$35.
Yeah, it's $35. Well, that's during this phase. You know, who knows when they put it into production because they're
a little heavy.
Yeah. A little spendy.
If these are like $15, though, man, I could.
Yeah, I could go crazy with these. Yeah.
Well, you never know what they're going to be able to do because they raise so much money. They're in Sweden, but they raise so much money that they may be able to scale production pretty dramatically, and maybe they can get the price way down. Anyway, I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
So new upcoming events, about the only thing that I see on here is the MEMA event, Content Strategy 2015, and that's on the 21st. And that looks like a really interesting event. And, you know, frankly, anybody that has any kind of a web presence, and everyone should, needs content strategy. You need to know when you're going to post, how often you're going to post, what you're going to, you know, how you're going to connect up with others and all of that kind of stuff. It's pretty important. Is there anything else that's new on here?
I think that's it. That's it. Don't forget about Mobile March.
Don't forget about IoT Fuse.
Ooh.
Which is actually before that a little bit.
Did you get the lighter for IoT Fuse yet?
Yeah. We got the fuses and the lighter and everything. Yeah.
Woo. You're all ready to go.
It's all done.
We gonna have a bonfire at that thing or
probably not because it's in Keller Hall at the U of M.
That would be hard to do. Well, how about out on the mall there? You know, do a big, you know, that would attract some attention and police and Minovate's a sponsor of that, right? So we all got to be there doing stuff, right?
Yes. You got to man the booth.
Okay. And, cool. Yeah. Live tweeting
there's actually also going to be something new at the event, and that is something that one of the founders of it, Patrick Delaney, we were talking about the concept, and he named it. And you guys know the concept of speed dating, right? Mm-hmm. Sit down at a table and you talk for a few minutes, you decide no, and you get up and you leave, you go to the next one. Everybody's got to switch. We're going to do something called speed mentoring, where we're going to have tables set up and people are going to be manning those tables that, you know, have a level of expertise or competency in a specific area. Not all those areas are defined yet. And then people can be a speed mentor and you can go over and sign up for a 15 minute session. And,
was this sort of like a hacky thing or a hacking deal or more of a, for developer focused, or is that how that's
well, it's going to be designed? Learning. It's going to be learning based for,
like Arduino and
there'll be a maker hacker developer track specifically. There's going to be more of a business oriented educational, what is IoT, you know, what's the state of IoT, that kind of thing. And then there's a third track that is can't remember now.
Sounds strangely like a Mobile March setup.
Oh, it does.
Okay. There's only so many models. Why not use that?
Yeah, one? Right. Why not use that one?
Yeah. Anyway, good. That's it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that there will be all sorts of things that transpire between now and next Saturday, where we'll talk to you more on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Alrighty, take care.
Take care, guys.
Cool.
well before we hit the barn. Back in the haystack and rolling in my baby's arm, girl. I'm driving, baby.